The CGA Tour, a podcast unlike any other. Now your host, Calvin Alexander.
Welcome back to the latest episode of the CGA Tour podcast. Tonight's guest here, I've got Jake Carlson, the first of two Jakes here, as we're going to be doing a three-part episode of the podcast, talking some Oklahoma State basketball transfers in at the end of the podcast with the new Texas Tech transfer, Robert Jennings, and the new FIU transfer, Avery Johnson as well. So first here, we got to talk some Oklahoma State football, kind of go through the schedule a little bit. We've got some new teams coming in here, and Jake and I, of course, are big Oklahoma State football fans here at the end of the day. So, Jake, I'd say there's a lot of stuff here we could get to. First non-conference game is Utah. Right after that, we've got K-State. Fortunately, one of the two's at home. Non-conference against Arkansas. And so many other great things. But first and foremost, we got a transfer out of Indiana this morning that officially committed to Oklahoma State, who is a big dude. He's 240 pounds running back out of Indiana. So,
oh my gosh.
Running backs, I didn't think normally guys were that size. The other transfer running back Oklahoma State got in is a 5'11 guy out of Arkansas who weighs 194. So, I mean, I've got some similarities to the Indiana transfer in height and size. I don't think anyone's thinking I'm a running back, though. So, props to him. He's more fullback size. You know, more Kai Staley, maybe, usage. You've been playing with me a while.
I guess my question, if you're a running back, what are you expecting coming to OSU this year?
You still have multiple years of eligibility. I think last year it was like Elijah Collins coming in and going, all right, me coming in from Michigan State, I don't need to keep going about Michigan State, right? So doing that and being like, oh, yeah, probably pretty good. And then now going, okay, you know what? See how it works out, right, at the end of the day. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of a weird deal, but at the same point, Oklahoma State, gets another transfer. I mean, we don't have a ton of transfers coming in, I wouldn't say. We have, in football here, which we're talking about first on the podcast, we've got a defensive transfer corner out of UTEP, Kobe Hilton. So great to always have a Kobe on the team. And the same day, we got AJ Green, Arkansas transfer. And also, same exact day, we've got three other transfers coming into Oklahoma State. In Obi Izigbo, on pronunciation, Edge, three-star transfer. Isaiah Glass, I assume is the pronunciation here, coming out of Arizona State, three-star transfer and three-star recruit. And then also a redshirt senior who is a tight end coming out of Ohio University, coming to Oklahoma State as well. And that's all February 7th. So if you haven't been following Oklahoma State athletics and all type of stuff here, I'm sorry, because we're rocking and rolling. We got it all going here. And there's one other transfer I guess I could talk about coming into Oklahoma State here that happened on February 5th, which is Dwayne Lofton, who's a wide receiver and previously Virginia Tech guy. So the transfer year last year where it's like, oh, we get all these transfers in, and Elijah Collins is like the guy to talk about because he's coming out of the Big Ten. These other guys, I mean, getting some Pac-12, getting some ACC, granted, Ohio's not, in a group of four, or in the Power Four conference, but, they're in the group of six. And, we've got some other guys, so I'm excited about it, getting an SEC transfer in, that's a running back. Like there's some good stuff here. We're doing all right on the transfer portal, ended up getting guys in for football at least, but what's your thoughts going into the season here? How excited are you? What kind of are you looking forward to about this football season? What are realistic expectations too?
I actually talked to PJ the other day about this. And so we basically both said that there is no excuse for OSU to lose more than two games.
Okay.
It's just not. And that's an attribution to the schedule. I don't think the schedule is like super tough. There's some tough games on there. Like if you drop to Utah, okay. I get it. Or if you go to Arizona and drop that game, if you drop Oregon, obviously I get it.
Well, or Oregon next year. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, but like, what are the games that are inexcusable to drop? I can tell you right now, I see a scheduled loss for Oklahoma State fans that we can look at and just stare right in the calendar. But it's, I'm curious if it's doing the same.
So, like, South Dakota State win, Arkansas should be a win, at Tulsa should be a win. Utah home, I think, is just going to be interesting because, like, I look at that game now and I'm like 24-21. Who wins? I have no idea. Like, that's kind of what that game looks like to me. At Kansas State, is that your schedule loss? Is that?
No, I'm talking like an inexcusable loss, but it's a scheduled loss. Like the K-State Utah, I'm like, yeah, you know, if we lose either of those, I'm still going, all right, hey, we're in this. Because the Big 12 this year, without OU in Texas, it's kind of wide open-ish. I mean, it's not, there's not a consensus, oh, you know what, I know they're going to win. And I interviewed a guy for UCF on part of the Big 12 huddle, part of the college huddle program now. And he is really high on UCF every single year. They've got Gus Malzahn, and then we kind of start talking through all the coaches in the Big 12. I mean, you're going through and you're like, okay, well, yeah, Dave Aranda, not a bad coach. You know, Sonny Dykes, not a bad coach, right? And like these three, you know, I mean, UCF, Baylor, and TCU are not the programs that we're talking about going, well, we're going to face them, you know, as the tough teams. We're talking about these guys as like the three teams and kind of three coaches where they're really good coaches, but their teams are not necessarily up where we are right now in, as far as expectations, talent level, et cetera. But they're still it's kind of going, okay, well, it's just not a cakewalk ever in the Big 12.
No, it's not. And you have a lot of teams of like similar ilk, I guess, that like a lot of really similar teams. I mean, the thing with those new Big 12 teams is does the talent gap smack them in the face this year? That's kind of where I'm at. And like, no disrespect to UCF, but you are at most the third choice by recruits in your own state. And yeah, like, I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but then not only that, you are also competing with Miami, which they might, you know, UCF might be fourth choice. And then you have to compete with Georgia, and then you have to compete with Auburn, and then you have to compete with Alabama, and then you have to compete with LSU. So it's like your recruiting pool has to look a little bit different now if you're UCF, because I don't necessarily know if you can go after the same players. Now, the difference is you can get transfers now. That's kind of where they need to look. Guys that want to come home, you know, guys that probably maybe went farther away to school and, you know, they're from Miami or, you know, that Central Florida area that we know is really good in football. So like, and Gus is great. Gus is great, but he's not a better coach than Gundy, and nobody says that. So, you know, that's that. But like, when I look at this, you know, first three games should be a win. Utah will obviously be very interesting. I also don't know what's going on with them. Like, I thought Cam Rising was going to play for like six straight weeks and he didn't play at all for the season. So I just don't know. If they have Cam Rising, I'm much more scared than whoever else they're going to throw out there, because I watched a lot of their games and was not impressed. At K-State, always going to be a toughie. West Virginia home should be a win. That at BYU, at Baylor, at TCU in, you know, 3 out of 4 weeks, those all three away games. And then we have Arizona State at home in the middle, which is homecoming, and what we should probably smoke them. But we need to go 2-1 in those games. And like you said, it's not even difficult games. They feel like schedule losses. They just feel like schedule losses.
So to me, the one that's a scheduled loss here is that Colorado game. And that's because it's in Boulder. It's the last game of the season. It's Deion Sanders. And just kind of bizarre things can happen. Like, it's not, it's, to me, this is a Gundy.
It'll also probably Gundy be weird snowing game.
Yeah, true. And then who knows? I mean, when I look through like all the portal rankings, Colorado has the second highest portal transfer rankings this year. I think last year they had number one or so. So, and they finished 4-8. So I'm not saying this is like the end all be all. This matters a lot, whatever, but it does do something. And the last game of the season, you theoretically play a lot better with brand new guys on the roster versus the first game of the season, just continuity, getting everything together. And that's how my basketball team went, that rec league basketball team I was on. And not to draw any more comparisons to that whatsoever, that's just very tongue-in-cheek, but I would say if I'm looking down the schedule, I'm going, okay, yeah, we're going to get beat up more and more, and then Colorado has 2 5-star round one, first day NFL draft picks on Thursday night, coming up in 2025. And when you have that, Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, it's like, okay, well, you know what? They have the guys who are talented, and they're at the two positions that matter. I mean, a guy who can play 140 snaps in a game, Travis Hunter, and play offense and defense, corner and wide receiver, hats off to him. If he can stay healthy for a full season, because last year he was dinged up, and play against Oklahoma State, hey, props. Like, just kudos to him. But that's a skill position guy. We're not talking about 2 5-star guys here who round day one picks who are the offensive and defensive linemen, where it's like, okay, you can kind of neutralize them a little bit. We're talking about the quarterback. And we're talking about the quarterback who, depending on which NFL draft analysis thing you look at for 2025, because it's all way too early, because we're still, the NFL draft is going on today. I mean, this is we're recording this podcast here right now on Saturday, April 27th. That's why I'm thundering up here, because, got the game later. And it's one of those where I go, okay, you know what? It just makes me nervous. It's a nervous Gundy game. That's what I'd say. And those, to me, are scheduled losses. Because, like, the South Dakota State, whatever. But going into last year, it was like, wait, who's going to start a quarterback? And then when it was, oh, we don't know, then everything was really up in the air game. Then we beat K-State. We get a little momentum. We're all of a sudden settling down because we picked a quarterback. And now,
who would have thought?
I don't know.
Not me.
No one thought, wait, maybe if you give a guy just the reins and just say, go for it. And then 3 games in, go, all right, well, he sucks, let's switch him out. But who knows? I still think at the end of the day, Bowman just had to prove that he was going to be this kind of a guy in games, that he just wasn't, marginally better, but he wasn't dramatically better in everything they had seen until he'd been playing games.
That's fair, and I would take that if we had serviceable backups.
Well, see, but I'm saying marginally like that, better. I don't think Bowman in camp and in fall and spring camp and whatever he was doing was looking that much better than Rangel. And Gunner, just leave it where it is. I just don't think that was the case. Otherwise, I think it'd be, oh yeah, Bowman starting week one. I just don't think he was proven that. Talk about some rust. I mean, that guy had not done anything since he left Tech.
Side question. Why is Garrett Rangel still on the team?
For hoots and giggles? I mean, I don't know.
You know, like, I'm serious.
Scholarship. Like, he still is on scholarship, I would assume. Some way, shape, or form. And the other guys who are coming in, it's like, all right, you know what? Like, let's give the new guy, Malachi, who... When I'm looking down, up and down, the Oklahoma State transfer in guys, that there he is not listed, which is bizarre to me. I'm on 3, so I just probably am not looking at it the correct way. But when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, okay, well, they transferred from a JUCO or something. That's why I wouldn't see it. It just is bizarre to me. I'm real curious here, like, what happens with this Oklahoma State season, but I'll just come back to real quick. I don't think there's any reason why we would not win the Big 12 this year. Just off the top. Just if we lose to Utah, early season loss. If we lose to K-State, that probably is kind of back-to-back losses, back-to-back weeks, 2 Big 12 teams that could face each other in the Big 12 championship. That's tough to come back from. But if we split those, I think if we're still okay, just we got to win out, of course. I mean, that's the thing. And that doesn't look like that's that hard to do. There's some teams here where I'm going, okay, well, you know what? I mean, BYU and Provo, like, that won't be easy. We barely beat them last year. But I do think that was a weird game. And Baylor at Baylor, like, okay, is Dave Aranda going to be able to recapture some of the 2021 magic? Probably not.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think so. Sonny Dykes in TCU, you know, but like the Texas Tech is none of these teams scare me, like just on paper.
No,
so let's see what the season looks like. And heck, by the time we play TCU, maybe they'll be top 10 in the country. Who knows? I mean, or they could honestly be on pace to not have a winning record either way.
Well, the way it's going, like half these teams that we're playing, you might as well flip a coin and they could be top 15. And then you could flip a coin the other way and they have won 3 games through 11. And it's just like the Big 12 is kind of like that. Whereas I wouldn't say the other conferences are as volatile. That's probably the best word, volatile, to use for just a lot of these teams where it's like, oh, hey, yeah, TCU made the playoff 2 years ago. You're like, wait, what? How? They're terrible. And then they got smoked by 4-8 Colorado. Like,
but that was the deal. It was like, oh my gosh, Colorado might be crazy good. They beat a team that was in the that was the national championship game last year. Granted, with a couple of guys got drafted, but still.
I can't wait for Overreaction Sunday, Week 1 next year. It's like they're going to be like so and so. They're going to say Shador's winning the Heisman. And they might win. They might go 6-6. And then Dion takes the Cowboys job.
Oh, Dallas Cowboys. That'd be hilarious. I do think there's a strong chance that Colorado beats us the last game in the regular season. I mean, I don't think Colorado's ever out of it because not to say other Big 12 teams are out of it, but like if Arizona State beat us, I'd go, okay, what in the world is going on? Right. I mean, it just is.
Yeah, they're
really, it would be one of those like, hang on a second. What? And I wish we're playing Cincinnati this year and wish we're playing Houston this year, et cetera. Cause that, man, we could have a couple more scheduled wins here. That'd be nice. If we lose Arizona State, I'm really going to be scratching my head. But if we lose to Colorado and Boulder for the last game of the season, when I'm just thinking about this team and really our position, our skill positions, all type of stuff are, maybe there's a lot of depth behind Ollie Gordon. I'm really curious to see how these, you know, Trent Howland's the Indiana transfer. And yeah. I'm really curious to see how he is, you know, coming in on the team, right? Like, okay, so what does this mean? Like, are we going to be good, bad, whatever? I mean, we have other running backs on the roster, you know? So it's not just Ollie Gordon and then no one. Is this the point?
Yeah. Well, and like I can already envision the most pissed off I'll be next football season is when we go into Colorado with 1 or 2 losses. You win, you go to the Big 12 championship. You lose, you don't, and we lose that game.
Yeah.
That and like that game, I think, depends on the weather. If it's snowing, we should beat them because we can run the ball.
Which is, gosh, can you imagine saying 10 years ago, hey, we'll have a Heisman Trophy dark horse or an idea of a Heisman Trophy guy at running back, not at wide receiver or quarterback 10 years ago. It'd be like, oh, it's a running back, though. And, oh, yeah, we're a running team. And, oh, yeah, our quarterback's been in college now for this is his 7th year.
Yeah.
He's got, hey, props to Bowman. He made it one more year than me. So
that's true. And my wife.
Fair enough. Yeah. I don't know. So the really good things here is that Oklahoma State is like able to basically retool and revamp the roster a little bit in the skill position areas that I think we were lacking in. Yeah. And that also comes in a wide receiver. I mean, getting Jaden Perez, granted, like he's a 3-star rating, his recruiting background, he's a smaller dude. I mean, he's 5'11" and a half. But
that,
you know,
I mean, but that
we need guys like that.
Yeah, that D3 guy that we got last year had like 2 really big games and helped us win 2 games.
I really hope he gets drafted. Leon Johnson
George
Fox University, by the way.
What is that up in Washington? Is that where that is? Did I read something about that?
I think that's up in Washington. And originally I'd said George Mason on another podcast or something.
So Oregon. It's in Oregon. So sorry, George Fox fans, if you're listening. Those guys are always necessary. I'm not thrilled about Jaden Nixon leaving because I just think we misused him. Big year for Casey Dunn. Big year for Casey Dunn. I thought he did really, really well down the stretch once they figure out who their damn quarterback was going to be. And like once he kind of was able to get in a rhythm with Bowman, like he was doing more with less. Let's just say that. He was doing more with less. And, you know, there have been, you know, what was it, 2 years ago where the play calling was rough. I thought this year it got a lot better. I thought a lot of the sets and motions that we were running were great. In that UCF game, I know people were kind of upset about that one because it was 48-3. But when they score 21 points in the first quarter, sorry, offense, you're kind of, it's not your fault anymore. Like, you know, that was one of those games where it's like NBA team comes out and hits four threes in a row in the last 2 minutes of the game and you don't make a shot. And it's like, okay, cool. Game's over.
Yeah, I'm not that mad or upset about the Oklahoma State basketball transfers out because I'm excited for the newness of Coach Steve Lutz. One thing I do need to make a program correction here is that I said one of our transfers from FIU is Avery Johnson. He's not the former Dallas Mavericks or TNT, head coach or TNT analyst. It's actually Arturo Dean. So, oh, for whatever on that pronunciation and remembering. I will say is that right now, this Oklahoma State football team could easily make college football playoffs. Just because one, it expanded into 14 teams, I believe, this year. And two, we're kind of good. I don't want to be way too high on the football team, but last year we made it to the Big 12 championship and we played against a team that's no longer in the conference. So they're not there to defend their title. And I don't know why I'd be really afraid of other teams. I understand like Kyle Whittingham's a great coach. Chris Klein, I think, right? At K-State head coach. Now I'm nervous every single name I throw out. Great, great head coaches, great teams. And I mean, both have really good quarterbacks. And we've lost to both those. Well, we haven't lost to Utah. We lost to K-State horrifically 2 years ago. So I'm never going, oh, you know what? That'll be an easy game. Like, that's never an easy game for us. It just is also sucky we have to go to them again. I mean, granted, that's the way the schedule rolls. But besides Utah and K-State, who we play early on in the season, I'm going, all right, like, yeah, there's probably another close game in there too. But besides that, if I'm predicting the standings here, it's like, okay, well, my super worry about K-State, well, they finished 9-4 last year overall, and they're 6-3 in conference. Am I super worried about Baylor? No, they're 3-9 last year. BYU, they're 5-7. I mean, TCU, 5-7, right? Like, I can just keep going.
Yeah.
But we don't play Iowa State this year, thank goodness.
Well, like my thing with Colorado too is your schedule got harder. It didn't get easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the Pac-12 was like extremely top heavy last year, but like they couldn't stop the common cold. You know, like it was that bad. And so it's like, do I take them more of a threat because of Deion? Or, like, because if we're just looking on the paper, I'm not worried about them at all. But the situation, like you said, is different when you go at Colorado, last game of the season. For all we know, at that point, Deion could have already announced he's leaving. And Shador could be sitting at that point. He's like, I'm sitting for the draft. And you're like, okay. Like that, none of that would surprise me. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, that one's just a little, that one's a little weird. But on paper, these teams aren't better than us. If you're basing anything off last year, and I don't think our team changed a ton, a lot of them aren't better than us.
No, I mean, I'll be curious to see how these new teams play in the Big 12 that are, you know, coming in. I mean, Arizona, they could be the team where it's like, hey,
they could
be up there. They've got a Heisman Trophy hopeful. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a lot to say here, mm-hmm. but it's not completely off the board. The betting lines are more favorable towards him winning the Heisman versus him not being on the board whatsoever. And yeah. I'm always kind of going, well, you know, Dave Aranda and Sonny Dykes and Gus Malzahn, like, they're never all, like, all three of them probably will not have just bad seasons again.
Right.
And UCF last year went to a bowl game, so they didn't have a horrible season. You know, TCU and Baylor didn't get up to snuff there. But the teams where I'm like, oh, man, how are they going to do this year? It's like, okay, West Virginia was shocking. They finished 9-4 last year. So
yeah,
what are they going to be able to do? Texas Tech, are they going to be able to kind of recapture some magic? And It does seem like K-State and Utah and us, and then it drops off enough. But we haven't mentioned KU yet. So
yeah,
we'll do like a whole like week by week schedule breakdown here before the season, of course, and get that to you here on the CJA Tour. But I do want to talk some basketball real quick here as well, too, just because we did have two guys transfer out that I think it's kind of interesting where both guys went. Yeah. Keon Williams went to ACU, Abilene Christian University, which I believe beat us in basketball last year.
I think they did. That might have been when I stopped watching.
Jake, that was like game two, man. You can't tell me you stopped watching game two.
I did. Oh, it was so bad.
I mean, all right. Talk me through it here. What do you think about? I thought Keon was definitely, we lost by five at home to Abilene Christian last year. Yeah. I do think Keon Williams will play really good for them, but it's weird that, for me, it's weird he transferred there. Like they probably have a better chance to get into the tournament next year than we do, just because if they win their conference, they can get in. And that, granted, they're only taking one, and Big 12 could have up to eight. I mean, teams, but. With that being said, I don't expect us to be one of the top eight in like the 14-team or 16-team Big 12 next year either.
Would you rather live in Abilene or Stillwater?
Stillwater.
I know.
I live in Stillwater. Like, I mean, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, I live in Stillwater. So I'd rather live in Stillwater. I mean, like, it's not even a question. I don't even know where Abilene is.
He can't want it to be easier because that's not really how athletes operate, but
he could want to go to a school where he has a better chance of succeeding though. That to me is like, hey, you know what? Well, I mean,
maybe
I agree.
Maybe development's better, or maybe, maybe Steve Lutz came in and said, hey dude, like no hard feelings, but you don't fit the way I play. Like that's very possible. And I think that's the part that that's the ugly side and the pretty side of the transfer portal is that, you know, it's like, hey, your coach left, the guy who recruited you left and all that. But like, Keon, this is going to be a better opportunity for you because I just don't see how you fit with this team.
Yeah. And also, I do want to say, if you're looking up and down the Oklahoma State basketball roster right now, there's not a spot where it's like, oh, hey, Keon Williams is going to start next year, or hey, Keon's got a good chance of playing a lot of games or whatever. I mean, Eric Daly transferred out and Keon Williams transferred out. So far, the rest of the guys on the portal, we haven't heard. Brandon Garrison, et cetera.
That's probably the one we're waiting on, huh?
That's got to be the one where it's like, okay, what's going to happen here? We're real curious because something could transfer happen either really well, really good, or really bad, either way. And he gets to air leave. And I don't know if I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? Like I really, really hope that I really do hope that Garrison stays, but like, I mean, the amount of transfers with Oklahoma State interest, Cisse's been back on campus, rolling around. Could he come back to Oklahoma State? And he's so like, he's like at a baseball game. He's not trying to, he's posting on in the social media. He's not trying to hide it. I think he's trying to probably drum up excitement. I don't know if there's other stuff going on, but the other guys here, I don't know how many names here. It's going to be just like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. That guy, because I don't know too many just incredible guys who are in college basketball anymore. I just, names do not ring a bell with me. If they're not on the Oklahoma State roster, if we don't play him.
There's a guy at TCU. Much going on this year.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a guy at TCU and a guy at Arkansas that Oklahoma State has interest and reported offers to. And then the other guys here who are on scholarship is, like I said, the 5'9 point guard, FIU, Arturo Dean. Now I'm super confident saying because I'm looking at it. We've got a freshman recruit, Jeremiah Johnson. We've got still Jamron Keller and Bryce Thompson. So if you're looking at it and you're Williams, are you going, okay, they've got Dean, Connor Dow, Robert Jennings, who's 6'7", physical, undersized kind of guy for his position, but at the same point, if Keon's 6'5", like they're not too far differently on the court here. Could be taking up some of the same type of minutes. We know Keon was playing undersized forward guard last year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but in all reality, Dean, Keller, and Thompson, those are three guards. So where is Williams starting over any of those three guys?
Right.
Maybe Dean, 5'9", is pretty small to be playing in the Big 12, but he led the nation in steals last year. He had over 100 steals. So like,
that's wild.
And he's used to playing over 30 minutes. So,
well, and maybe Lutz wants guys that can shoot, which we don't have.
We've got one guy who's halfway decent shooting, and that's Connor Dow. And halfway, I say, because he's known as a 3-point guy coming into college. And just last year, I don't think he was getting a lot of good open looks.
Kind of his thing. You know what I'm saying? But like,
yeah.
And, you know, Keon, he's a much better basketball player than I am, but he can't shoot.
Sorry, Jake. But yeah, of course. He's way better basketball player than you. There's not even a comparison here. If Keon Williams decided he wanted to play men's 5v5 rec basketball on Thursday nights, I got a spot for him. The team was wide open. I mean, 6'5", he would have been, I think, the same height as the tallest guy on the team. With that being said here, and not to poke too much fun, Eric Daly transferred to UCLA. That's go play for Mick Cronin out in LA. I'm not going, man, that's a weird move. And Keon Williams, I am going, man, that is kind of a weird move because what else was out there? But if Keon's looking around going, I'm not going to play that much. All right. Hey, find the next best option. Go for it. And ABU or ABCU guys got to know him because we played them last year and they probably know Williams, but Eric Daly going to UCLA, that's not really an Oklahoma State connection that I can think of in any way, shape or form. Besides highly touted recruit coming into college, played 1 year at Oklahoma State. Did a podcast with Ollie Gordon. They had a series going, and Ollie found a new host or new co-host because Eric Daly Jr. is out west. And I've got some family members who are big UCLA fans and alums, et cetera. So I know they'll be real curious. And Eric Daly, really good basketball player, but definitely did not get to his
get to his
spots or his stats or whatever last year because. I mean, we only won 12 games. It's kind of tongue in cheek. I think these guys are good. I wish he had stayed. I wish Keon had stayed, but that's because I'm going. Got six guys on scholarship right now, so of course I wish guys would stay. Because I feel like these 4-star guys could just be getting better and better. But I'm not that upset either way though, because like if Garrison leaves, I'm gonna go. Okay, is he gonna have like a Cisse type of deal at Ole Miss? Or is he going to go and just blossom somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And also, like, I'm pretty sure it was Lutz at Corpus Christi. Was that right? Before
Yeah, Texas A&M, Texas A&M, CC, yep.
Yeah, and there was something about him having like 12 transfers on the roster and they still went to the tournament. And so like...
Oh, yeah. No, that's right. I interviewed a guy who covered WKU and he's like, hey, we got transfers in from Purdue where Lutz was before he was head coach at Corpus Christi. We got transfers in from all over the place and that helped us out a ton.
That seems like... You know, he's going to be able to recruit a little bit better now, but it, you know, where the hiring cycle is and all that stuff, not his fault. But he, like, I would have to imagine that we're going to bring in a lot of recruits or a lot of transfers at least. And he's just going to find guys that want to play his style because it seems like his style is pretty specific. But it's like, I wonder, you know, for example, how many shots like Bryce Thompson takes next year and are they open? Because I think like that's not even knocking him, but I just don't think he had enough opportunities where the shot was open. It was a lot of like late in the clock stuff. And so I would love to be able to get to see, you know, that five-star Bryce Thompson that not that we were promised, but that he was kind of supposed to be in a system that makes sense for him.
Yeah, and just being able to be that super duper senior who plays really smart, knows what's going on, is just a true sheriff of the offense. You know, he's just making sure everything works out real well. Say one more thing about Eric Daly here. I forgot how highly touted a recruit he was. I mean, he had
McDonald's All-American.
McDonald's All-American. Right? Calipari went to go visit him. He named Florida State as one of the top eight, but before then, he had an offer from Texas, Georgia, Alabama, TCU, Miami. I'm leaving out a couple teams here and there, but Tennessee, Michigan, Iowa State, A&M, and then all of a sudden, he comes to Oklahoma State and basically commits a couple months later. So, it's... That one could sting. I think this is the biggest transfer out of Oklahoma State football or basketball, I want to say, that could sting the most. Jabbar Muhammad, I was reminded here not too long ago that, his transfer over to Washington and then to Oregon stings a little bit. But all being said, I don't know if a guy who's playing at three different colleges in 3 years is really going, hey, cream of the crop, you're the best overall. But then again, the guy transfers from Oklahoma State, you know, power forward to Washington, who is going to be in the Big Ten, and then, you know, he's in the Pac-12 last year in the national championship game, and then transfers from there to Oregon, who I would say I trust Oregon to make it back farther to their heights in Washington.
Also could very easily be in the national championship game next year.
Tell you what, if that Dylan Gabriel kid can get his head on straight and turn it around, that OU guy, man, maybe they'll figure it out, but I don't know. See what Peter James Agnich, you know, thinks about it here. The OU fan here who we drops name on the podcast every so often, or UCO fan or Purdue fan or whatever he's going with today. So
it's been,
I don't
Purdue
know,
lately. Hey,
going to Purdue.
I think Gabriel's gonna like destroy people there. Bo Nix was a first round pick because of it. I'm just gonna say that.
I'm trying to be funny because at the same point, people are going, that Caleb Williams kid, he transferred out of OU and turned out all right. You know, Spence Rattler transferred out of OU and he's probably going to get drafted. If he doesn't get drafted, I'd be shocked.
Has he been drafted yet?
He could have been drafted. I mean, this is early on day three of the NFL draft in round four. So he could have been, I just missed it.
Here you go. We'll do this now. Is Dylan Gabriel a first round pick next year?
No.
Okay.
No, there's just no way. I can't see.
I very easily think he could be.
Alan Bowman's going to be a first round pick next year, easily, Jake. I mean, without argument. Yeah, so you think Dylan Gabriel's on Alan Bowman's level? I mean, who lost to who?
Who lost to who?
Because you know that's what matters is wins and losses, not Not being, you know, I'll leave it there. Michael Penix Jr. getting drafted the Falcons. You want to talk about this for 1 minute before we wrap up? I know you and I have over the years have covered everything under the sun sports wise. So
yeah,
give you a minute to vent. I'll talk about it and we'll wrap up.
I got, and you can attest to this, I got more into NFL this year. I was not an NFL hater, but I just didn't always have the time. And I watch a ton of college football. I watch an absolute ton. And so, you know, it naturally helped to kind of pay attention to the NFL, and it's just better to watch. It's just better to watch right now. You know, people can dislike Mahomes and whatever. I don't really care. He's the most fun player to watch, and he's on TV all the time. So I'm not going to complain about it. I don't know why you pay Kirk Cousins if you are going, because if you're the Falcons at 8, right? Did they get that pick from Minnesota?
No, they were just that bad.
Okay, they were just that bad. All right. I couldn't remember what they got in that Kirk Cousins trade. But
yeah,
if you are, this is the part I don't know. You're at 8. You are sitting there at 8, and Michael Penix is not going to get drafted. Right? You should be very aware, if you are the GM of the Atlanta Falcons, that Michael Penix is not going to get drafted. At before 8, 1 through 7, he ain't going.
Yeah.
So you sat here for the last like 4 months and were like, we're going to trade for Kirk Cousins. We're going to sign Kirk Cousins. And then we are also going to draft a quarterback on a team that could literally probably just, like, they're not bad. I don't think they're bad. Quarterback was definitely their, like, you know, bad area last year. But, like, if you're the Falcons, best player available. You take best player available. And the best player available, no offense, was not Michael Penix. It just wasn't. And so I don't understand why you draft a 24-year-old, and this isn't a Penix thing. This is just my confusion with the situation. You objectively draft a 24-year-old guy who has injury concerns to sit behind a guy who has playoff questions, right? We know the Kirk Cousins primetime stuff, all of that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that's what people say about him. Who is also, oh, by the way, coming off an Achilles injury. And then you give him $100 million guaranteed. And you still sit there and go, we're going to draft Penix at 8. This is nothing against Michael Penix. This is nothing against Kirk Cousins. I enjoy them both dearly. I don't get it. I don't get it. It would make more sense if you are the Washington Commanders and you trade down and you're like, instead of Jaden Daniels, we're going to draft Penix.
Wait, the 24-year-old quarterback who's played more snaps than anyone else ever in college as a starter? You think he might not be that great in the NFL because it took him so long to be good in college?
I just don't understand. And anybody can take that rant however they want. I just simply don't get it. That's all I'm going to say about it. I don't get it. I don't get the situation. For Penix, he probably feels like crap. For Kirk Cousins, he also is probably like, hey, man, I made the joke to you last night. Like, probably first time he's cussed in 10 years. You know, like, because I did, and I don't even care about the situation that much. I do, but I don't. And so it's like, if you're Kirk Cousins and you didn't know, like, what the heck, man? That's probably what he said. That's probably exactly what he said.
Yeah, here's the last thing I'll say before we get to the part 2 and 3 of the podcast here, is there was a lot about Penix's injuries of why that should scare teams off, because at the end of the day, he is like 7-8 months older than Jaden Daniels. So he's mm-hmm. the oldest round one quarterback, I think. I forget how old Bo Nix is. And just to give everyone a little bit of history here, if we listen to the podcast for more than 3 or 4 years, I saw Bo Nix play for Auburn with my dad against Oregon, not in person, but when I lived and worked in Detroit for the Pistons. So we're talking before COVID, and it's 2024. So anyways, regardless, like, we'll get back to the regular schedule programming here. I just, Penix has injuries, but he has not had an injury since 2021. And yes, he missed the remainder of the season in 2021. But like, there is a lot of Penix's injury history isn't great. No, it's not. I'm not trying to say it is.
Yeah.
But like, he tore his ACL. Okay. You know, but he tore his ACL playing college football. It wasn't like he tore his ACL playing, you know, just having fun with friends, playing some pickup hoops, right, or whatever. Right. Like, he tore it playing Division I college football for Indiana against Penn State. Like, this is not, people get injured. Guys get injured. Like, I don't, then what happens next? Oh, he re-tore the same ACL against Maryland two seasons later in November, like basically the last, I want to say probably the last game of the season of the regular season for Penix, he tears his ACL,
doesn't happen either. I'm supporting your argument that, yeah, saying like it's just a freak thing that, you know, guys, yeah, don't tear their ACLs in the same knee twice. Usually.
Yeah. And it doesn't usually happen. Knock on wood, doesn't happen to me. And in between there, he has a fracture of his shoulder clavicle, which I don't think we're really talking about at all. Now, that's on his non-throwing hand, or non-throwing arm, excuse me. He's, yeah, and then it's his shoulder, but like, he's left-handed. This happened on his right arm. So, yeah, okay, you know, that sucks. Like, he basically has three seasons where he doesn't play out the whole entire season.
Yeah.
You know, okay, it sucks. But he's not doing this week one. He's just not. I mean, he's just,
yeah.
And then in 2021, Penix ran under a season because he's had a shoulder AC joint separation. That's in October 2nd, 2021. Wait, did anything bad happen after he left Indiana injury-wise? No. How long did he play at Washington? 2 years. I mean, there's just all these things where I'm going, okay, Penix is not a great bet overall for longevity because he has injury issues. That's fine. But for it to be like, hey, I wouldn't draft the guy in the first round because he has injury issues, That's a little much for me. It's a little much. I don't hate the pick overall at the 8th overall pick, but I do hate it because of the situation. Because you just don't. This is something where, I don't know, you call up the Dallas Cowboys and you go, do you want to draft Rome Odunze right here, right now? Paramount, yeah, with CeeDee Lamb. Yeah, I mean, do you want to draft the next offensive lineman that you need? Because the Cowboys, at this point, they've had a great offensive line for quite some time, but definitely need some retooling here and there. This is a time where you talk to the teams who are basically later on in the draft, who cap situation isn't great, and so you get them a higher profile player on a rookie deal, and you steal some draft capital from them. And we all know the Falcons could have gone, heck, if we, Penix will probably still be there at 26, and if he's not, I don't know, we'll wait 2 years and draft the guy, because if Kirk Cousins isn't starting in 2 years, something really bad happened.
Yeah.
Like a Carson Wentz fiasco of losing the locker room, having Jalen Hurts start happened. And that's, yeah, that's the one big comparison I hear from people is that, and I do understand that whole idea. I mean, Hurts is drafted round two, like one of the first picks, if not the first pick in the second round. And it worked out incredibly well for the Eagles because they've been contenders with Hurts, and they've gone to Super Bowl with Hurts. So that's been, yeah, great. This is a top 10 pick. The value's not there. So I don't know, yeah, with that, Jake, we'll go ahead here and wrap up part one of the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me here on this part of the CGA Tour. If you're not already and you're not going to listen to the other parts, subscribe, follow, whatever you got to do to at the CGA Tour on YouTube and wherever else you listen to podcasts. And thanks so much. We'll be back here with part two in just a moment. All right. Well, now we bring on the first guest of the podcast here, Jake Gibson at Jake the MC. And once you hear his voice, you'll know why that's his Twitter handle here, or excuse me, X handle, I should say. But from another guy from the College Huddle Network here in the College Huddle Podcast Network, join us to talk some FIU as Oakland State just got a new recruited, new transfer in, Arturo Dean. So Jake, tell me about him and yourself.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Cal. Yes, I am Jake Gibson from the Pause Up Podcast. We are the official fan podcast of FIU Athletics. I'm proud members of the College Huddle. And as you mentioned, Oklahoma State men's basketball just got a good upgrade with the addition of Arturo Dean from born and raised in South Florida. He's a friend of the show. He's been on an episode of the podcast already, I believe episode 25, way back in the day. Last year we had him on. He was a cool guy. He talked about his story getting to where he was at FIU, and he was a monster, Cal. He could do everything. Offensively, he was great. He was a team leader, usually with points and assists. But on defense, that's how he really got his notoriety. He led the nation in steals last year, averaging 3 steals a game. He was really great at that. He was the identity of the FIU Panthers team, I'd say. This year especially, and even last season, the season before, when he was a freshman, literally won the Conference USA Freshman of the Year award for his efforts. So a big part of FIU men's basketball has just been shipped over to Stillwater, and I know he will likely, if not make the starting roster, find some good time on the bench and still provide some solid minutes for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think no matter what, he starts. That's something I got to say. I'd be shocked if he doesn't, honestly, overall there. But the main thing I'm curious about here is that, of course, he led the nation in steals last year. I mean, that is the number one thing, right? He's a guard. Oklahoma State right now, we have 6 scholarship players on the roster, including including the new recruit we just got in, Jennings. So it's he re-upped his commitment, which is great. But, you know, we got Arturo Dean. We've got kind of a secondary ball handler in Bryce Thompson. And then Jerron Keller, Connor Dow, and incoming freshman, like I said, Jeremiah Johnson. So the backcourt might be a little loaded, but Dean's a 4-star kind of transfer recruit rankings.
Yeah.
4-7, clearly playing at FIU, playing D1. That goes without being said here, but I mean, he's a great player. Can you tell more about us, you know, from your interview with him and interacting with him, as well as kind of who he is off the court as well, too?
So he's super down to earth. He was nice with us. He's very cordial. He was happy and privileged to be playing in his hometown of Miami, Florida. He really made it a big point to attend other FIU events aside from just men's basketball. He'd go to the football games, go to the baseball, women's basketball, of course. He'd be there. He'd be repping the blue and gold of FIU as much as he could, and He still had a leader mentality. He knew when to put the team on his back in games in which other players on the team were not committing as well as they could be to the action. And Arturo Dean was there to sort of lead the way. It's no surprise that most of the FIU's wins this past season were directly because of Arturo Dean's success primarily. However, FIU did have some other solid pieces of their roster, such as Javonte Hawkins, Seth McKinney. They all provided in ways that Arturo Dean couldn't, but still. What made Arturo such a great player for FIU was that he was reliable on both sides of the court, on both offense and defense. So that sort of gave him the mindset that no matter what the situation is, FIU was never completely out of a game, because only a couple steals later and a scoring drive for the Panthers, they'd be right back into this game. I think that an underrated aspect of Arturo Dean that I'm sure Oklahoma State will really appreciate is his ability to perform in the clutch or in the big games. FIU did not have an amazing season last year. However, they still made it to the Conference USA tournament and actually beat Jacksonville State to win the first round. And in that game, Arturo Dean, again, carried the team on his back, 21 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals, all in one game against the Gamecocks. So he can provide you talent in tournament games and in games against other solid opponents and the games that really matter the most, which I know is a very important aspect for a team like, you know, Oklahoma State that, you know, has conference title aspirations.
Yeah, the major thing we're going to have to look forward to next year is basically to see how Steve Lutz, with a brand new coach, comes in, you know, kind of transfers what he's doing. It does seem like he is a very defensive-minded coach overall, but just definitely just a coach's coach at the end of the day. He's not going to be really going out and be a player's coach and that side of things. I'm sure there's always both sides of the story here, but we know our previous head coach was definitely more of the friendly guy coming in. What would you say kind of Dean's kind of mental toughness and how he plays? Because I'm kind of getting at the fact that he's 5'9 as well, too. He's quite an undersized guard when it comes down to it. So for him to lead the league in steals, hey, that's great. But is he going to be able to stay on the court in Big 12 play as well, too?
Keep in mind the amount of statistics that he was able to lead the team in just his freshman season alone. Assists, steals, total minutes, and defensive rebounds, all in just his freshman year alone. And he only got his talents, he only improved his talents in his second year last year. He was Conference USA third team, which I think is a bit disappointing. I feel like he should have absolutely made second, maybe even had a shot at third. However, he did make the all-defensive team. And, you know, when you lead the nation in steals, it kind of makes sense. They invite you to the all-defensive team for Conference USA. You mentioned his size, but that helps with his speed. He's very fast. He can get to both sides of the court as fast as anyone can in the country. And that, of course, leads to his ability to perform breakaway steals and then pass the ball to Hawkins, who's probably open for three, or to Pinkney to lay it down at the rim. So I think size-wise, yeah, he's not going to be nowhere near the tallest player on Oklahoma State's roster, but that he can absolutely make up for that still by providing in every other aspect he can. I mean, he ended his career with FIU with averages of 12.3 points per game, 4.6 rebounds, 3.9 assists, and 3.4 steals, which is the best in the nation last year. So very impressive stuff. It's funny, when he initially announced he was entering the transfer portal, I thought he'd stay home and go to somewhere like the University of Miami, who could, again, another very solid basketball program that could utilize his skills. However, he made it all the way over to Oklahoma State. So he's only one of a few players to transfer from this team. And Coach Jeremy Ballard made it a point to create leaders of this roster from players from the JUCO level or just transfers from other schools. And Arturo Dean kind of fit that bill. You mentioned mental fortitude. He absolutely had it. Like I said, he was a natural born leader in my eyes. There were a few moments during the middle of the season where he actually went down with minor injuries, but came back into the game or did not miss much time at all. He's not an injury prone player by any stretch of the word. So he can absolutely go a full season for Oklahoma State, and no matter what the coaching staff with the Cowboys asks him to do, I'm sure I know he can do it to the best of his ability. If they want him to be a defensive threat, he can absolutely do that. If they want him to sort of lead the team in scoring, I think he can do that as well.
Well, that's awesome. And of course, good to hear as well too here. I have noticed though, that is, yeah, basically all of his stats are relatively the same between his freshman year and his sophomore year, except for the steals. I mean, the steals increase a whole one steal a game on average. Here turnovers go half a percentage point, so I don't know at the end of the day how much difference we're talking. He goes up a full rebound on average as well too, but the big thing here is that he went up in 3-point percentage. Do you notice a big difference from year one to year two? He got 10% better on 3 points
in the games that players like, because way earlier in the season, we had a player named Jonathan Abar. He had to go down with a season-ending injury, so that increased Arturo Dean's workload by default to get him more time to sort of hone his skills, to make him the everyman kind of player. And yeah, in that process, he definitely did increase his three-point percentage. There were some games, including he didn't play that game. There were some games, such as that game against Jacksonville State, that he absolutely performed well from beyond the arc. I wouldn't say he's still known to shoot the three that often. We have players like Javante Hawkins for that, who unfortunately has graduated. So FIU is going to need to go back to the drawing board for that as well. FIU lost a lot of players either due to the transfer portal or to graduation. So we're going to have to rebuild our roster here at FIU once more, which I know Coach Ballard, in his sixth or seventh year, he's probably getting a little bit tired of that, but it's just the way it is with the transfer portal and G5 schools like Conference USA, which in itself has changed dramatically in the last 2 years with the departure of a bunch of teams and the additions of Jacksonville State, Liberty, New Mexico State, Sam Houston, Kennesaw State this year. So I would, yeah, his 3-point percentage definitely went up, but I don't see him as the kind of guy that can go a full game of just shooting from beyond the arc. He may do it once in a blue moon, but I wouldn't expect him to be known for that in his time at Oklahoma State.
Gotcha. Well, we'll ask a couple more years. We kind of wrap up at least with the year. What would you say he will be known for besides the defensive toughness? What's his kind of offensive play style?
He is a good passer. He's a great passer. He'll get your leading score, his shot to score, if he's not shooting himself. His pull-up jumpers are really good. His layups are usually go in. There were a few instances where some players on the team really struggled with layups towards the latter end of the season. That was very frustrating. But Arturo Dean can be the Swiss Army knife of this Oklahoma State Cowboys team. He can pretty much do it all if needed. And I feel like that's what he's going to be known for. He's going to be that guy that can provide you with anything you need from him. And that's what made him so good at FIU, because regardless of how the rest of the team was doing, he stepped up to the plate and delivered usually. So, and of course, not to mention he was a great guy, down to earth, a fun teammate. So I've been told by other teammates of FIU as well as the coach, he's very mature for his age, and he still has years to go. He's only a sophomore, you know, so he still has a couple of years to go for Oklahoma State. And hopefully, you know, we wish him the best of luck, and we hope that he finds some success over in Stillwater.
Well, yeah, no, that's awesome. Good to hear. And, you know, I'll leave you out on this one here. You're talking about he's got two more years left in college, mm-hmm. at least, you know, I mean, at least theoretically. But, you know, for Oklahoma State's sake, hopefully that's only two, just because then nothing bad happened. But with that being said here, what do you think he can improve on in those final 2 years? What is he lacking necessarily right now?
It's tough because, like I said, he's the kind of player that does everything at least well. And there's obviously some aspects of his game that he does super well. I would say his rebounding overall, he can improve upon offensively. And again, he's 5'11", and that's not to say that he can't jump or he can't go for the ball. He absolutely can. He was actually solid with defensive rebounds. Offensively, I think his rebounds could improve in that department to just sort of provide more pressure on offense, which obviously Arturo himself can provide already. But I would say offensive rebounds is something to look out for to see if he can improve upon that. But yeah, like I said, he's a very well-tooled athlete that can serve you well in pretty much every category, and that's what makes him such a great player, and I'm guessing that's what made Oklahoma State pull the trigger on recruiting him.
Yeah, well, hey, sounds like he'll be a great addition to the basketball roster for Oklahoma State and some much-needed help, at least on the defensive side, compared to last season. We were all right defensively, but heck, we could definitely use a playmaker here going forward a little bit like him and kind of bring him into the rotation. So, you know, the last thing I'll say is being 5'9", wouldn't expect too many boards. You know, wouldn't expect that he's you know, kind of going out there trying to get the defensive or offensive rebounds. But, hey, you know what? He's going for it. So, it's 0 or 1 even. On average. So that being said, Jake, where can everyone find you and listen to more FIU info?
So my Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, Instagram handles are at JakeDMC. You can also follow at Pazza Podcast on every social media platform, X, Instagram, Facebook, our YouTube channel. We also have our own website called the Pazza page where we write articles, our recaps, previews, as well as an episode archive. We have a bunch of stuff going on. We're also on Believe, the audio platform, so you can listen to all our work on that, on Believe, on audio, files as well, MP3s. Aside from that, we're ourselves at the Pause Up Podcast are growing exponentially, and of course, we can now say we are the official fan podcast of FIU Athletics, which has been a dream of ours. We've had a ton of awesome guests from all over FIU hop on the show, players, coaches, alumni. We've even had the president of the university on it at one point. So it's been a fun ride for us. And yeah, we're only growing. So at Pause Up Podcast everywhere, essentially.
Sounds great. All right. Well, Jake, thanks so much here. And then now we'll continue on to the second part here of bringing the transfer portal talk with Spencer from 23 Personnel to talk a little bit of the Texas Tech transfer. Thanks again, Jake.
Thank you.
All right. Well, now for the next segment of the podcast here, we're joined by Spencer of the 23 Personnel podcast, part of the College Huddle. Please follow at the College Huddle on Twitter, everything you see. And I'll get Spencer on for one of the Big 12 Huddle episodes here before too long. But for the CGA Tour, of course, we have an Oklahoma State transfer from Texas Tech. So one Ask the Texas Tech guy here. It's been following. Robert Jennings joins us. And he's the kind of one of the big recruits Steve Lutz has gotten into the transfer portal. And Spencer, welcome on. And also, can you tell us more about Robert?
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me on. Robert, or as we've affectionately called him, Bob. Robert's one of those guys that when his usage went up with the Warren Washington injury there towards the end of January, beginning of February, you just love the minutes you got from him. He hadn't been able to crack into the rotation, mainly because of just how McCaslin was using Washington. And then just the size differential, right? Like he was being asked to play that five type of position. Although we don't, you know, we have typically kind of gone away from like having a traditional positions, but at 6'7", he was kind of undersized to play that long term. He's kind of pressed into that rotation or that kind of service out of necessity, and did really well. He went from 5-6 minutes a game, and it was there for basically the month of February, 15-20. He had 28 minutes at Iowa State. So he's a relatively, for how he was used at Texas Tech, he was undersized, right? To be looked at to play the five or whatever you're going to call that at 6'7", you're like, that's not really what you would want. But when he was in there, he played a lot bigger than that 6'7". He was kind of like the attitude guy that you would look to, being the tone setter, with the intensity and physicality. He was always kind of seen, at least at Texas Tech, as more of like a long-term type of project guy. And with the roster that McCaslin put around, that he built coming into the second year for Robert or Jennings, we just weren't sure what you're going to get from him. So, he's an interior guy. He battles for boards, which is something that Texas Tech needed desperately this year. I don't know how much of the Red River basketball team you watched, but we were getting bodied night in, night out off the glass. It just wasn't where this team was focused, where they were, where their skill set was. Did not take a three this year, which is fine. Again, that wasn't really his game. Was moderately like involved in the offense again, because he wasn't Warren Washington, which we ran a lot of the offense through when he was on the court, and especially those first couple of games, kind of trying to figure out like what we need to do to replace Washington. But I mean, he was serviceable. We're not like pulling our hair out that Jennings is gone, but we weren't celebrating or saying like, okay, we'll be better without him. I mean, he was absolutely a major part of this team in the second half of the season, out of necessity. And he blossomed into the role like we needed him to. Would have loved to have kept him. It's hard to root for a guy that transfers in conference, but the majority of his games going forward for the Cowboys, like I would be happy to see him be successful, just not in Lubbock or when Tech travels to Stillwater.
Yeah, I got to say, he is maybe the only player ever, but I doubt that I could say that and still be smiling afterwards. But he was 100% against Oklahoma State last year. He didn't miss one shot. He only took one shot in the first matchup, but 100%. And then he only took two shots in the second matchup, still 100%. And he was 4-4 from the free throw line from that charity stripe in the second game too. So, I mean, he put up 10 points in both matchups. And for a guy who only started 10 games and averaged 4.5 points, he definitely looked good in Galgariba. Now, granted, it was for the wrong team. But with that being said, we're happy to have him. He just wasn't a guy who I thought we'd get. Steve Lutz and the new coach, of course, is going to bring a lot of new ideas and different perspectives and all that fun kind of wordy phrases here as well, too, to the Oklahoma State program. But, you know, with Bob, I guess, leaving, you know, if you guys aren't going to miss him too much, can we also kind of talk about maybe why he didn't start, you know, or why you think he just wasn't the player? Was it really just because, hey, Washington was a better overall and Jennings was going to be kind of that project to get there? Or is there any maybe one part of his game you notice where you're like, hey, you know what? He's just not, I mean, I know he's 6'7", he's undersized, you know, 247 sports reminds them of the Cam McGriff, who Oklahoma State fans know real well, Cam McGriff. But yeah, what are kind of the stuff we could be looking to have him improve on year over year?
Well, so he did play, he didn't take a lot of shots for the minutes he played, which you can look at in multiple ways, because for Texas Tech, for a majority of the season, we had a guy that took all the shots. And we lived or died by how well Pop Isaac was shooting. You know, if you look at his game logs, right? Like at Iowa State, he played 28 minutes and shot 7 times. TCU, 15 minutes, five shots. He took 4 shots against Tech. Like he's not a volume shooter. That just wasn't his game. And again, maybe because of his size and the position he was playing, like there just weren't a lot of shots available for him to take. Like if he was in the paint with the ball, like he was almost always outmatched by somebody 4-6 inches taller than he is. So I would say it depends on the system that he's going to fit into. And obviously I think he's going to feel comfortable and confident committing to Oklahoma State, that they're going to be able to use him in a way that will let him shoot more. I mean, he's not like a bad shooter. Like the shots he put up were good. I mean, I think his effective field goal percentage was over 50%. Which you love to see, is like, you know, the bigger guys, you want to see those numbers high, and they were. I mean, he was really physical, despite being smaller. You know, so like for him, I think a lot of what's going to be is like, how can he continue to build on his offensive game? And then how is he going to be used and counted on defense, right? Like if he's not, you know, if he's not the guy that you need to guard your 6'10", 7-footer, he may flourish. I mean, he's not the quickest guy. So you can't really count on him like on a wing out there against a guy that can, you know, pump bake a three and then drive past him. Which again, maybe that's why he was put there at the five. It just, you know, he had some limited mobility there. But I think offensively, like I said, he took good shots. He did have a knack for turning the ball over. So, you know, for him to take some next steps forward, I think, you know, obviously ball security and then being able to continue to grow the offensive game.
All right. Well, I mean, that's definitely a guy that we need, though. I always think in college basketball, especially, you're going to have guys who are going to want to put up shots, but having smarter, headier players who are, you know, able to sound like a, you know, kind of be that guy on the court who goes, hey, you know what? I'm just the board man. That's all I want to do. Just get paid that way. Sounds like Bob Jennings, but Robert Jennings, at least for now, until maybe we reemerge with a nickname or so. We'll see. Sounds like a great guy and great transfer into Oklahoma State. So, well, with that being said, Spencer, thanks so much for joining here. Just want to get a couple quick key thoughts here about the new transfer to Oklahoma State. So really appreciate it. If you don't mind here, just if anyone's following Oklahoma State sports and stuff and now wants to learn more, a little bit more about Texas Tech, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can follow me or the show. You can follow the show on X at 23personnel. I'm at punts suck. But yeah, the show is at 23personnel. We do our weekly shows Tuesday nights. We stream them live if you want to catch them over on YouTube. Other than that, yeah. The other thing I want to talk about though with Jennings really quickly is he's still young, right? Like this is only his second year. So obviously a lot of growth and maturity potential in that he's not some like fifth year guy that like will you know, only get him for one season. If he's going to be at Oklahoma State, like his ceiling will continue to rise. Like he's a young guy, that was getting more and more comfortable. Obviously he's got some experience now on his third coaching staff in 3 years. So his depth, his breadth there, with the different styles, I think is a plus for him. So I think it looks up for him.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, all of his stats keep going up year over year. Granted, he's playing more minutes a game on average. And he's played in one more game this year than last year, et cetera. But his points have increased. You know, I mean, we're talking margins here that are kind of slim at the end of the day. But anyway, with that being said, we'll take the transfers we can get with a bunch of the Oklahoma State guys in the portal and the new coaching regime in our front as well, too. So,
yeah, I understand how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you guys are a little bit aware, and it's been 7 years before we've been aware. So we'll see how it all goes. So thanks again for joining here, and we'll catch you again soon.
Yes, sir.